Okay. All right. Good evening, everybody. This is All About Tenet Discord group. And my name is Haas, and we have sports here tonight as well.
Hi, guys.
And we are both extremely excited to introduce Maiko Quiroz, the COO of Tenet FinTech Group. How are you this evening, Maiko?
I'm doing great, Haas. Thank you. How are you?
Yeah, we're great. We're both extremely excited for this. We appreciate your time tonight to do this, and I know all the shareholders are definitely excited to hear from you.
Yeah, I'm equally excited to talk to all of you. And first and foremost, thank you for the opportunity to first, you know, introduce myself maybe in a little more personal and intimate kind of way to the shareholders. And second, I'll be happy to answer to the best of my ability any questions that you guys might have.
Yeah, that's great. You know, that's actually a great idea. If we could start off by just having you answer some questions about yourself, you know, some of your background, you know, how you got to this point for working with Tenet, I think it would help everybody just, you know, get a good idea of who you are.
Yeah, absolutely. It would be my pleasure. So listen, in terms of, you know, I'm a professional executive with close to 25 years of work experience. And although I have worked in many industries in the past, in both, you know, Canada and the U.S., I thought perhaps it would be worth sharing with the group, you know, one of my experiences, which I thought would be of interest to everyone who's listening. And this takes me back to 2006, 2007, when I was invited to participate as a founding member of the first online small business lending company to be built and to successfully launch operations in Canada. And that was really how I actually got involved with what is now known as the fintech industry back in those days. You know, fintech was a really fancy word and very few people really knew what, you know, B2B and B2P and P2P meant. So listen, it was, you know, a small group of people that were working on building this application. Like I said, it was the very first online lending platform to be built in Canada and to be launched for commercial use. So we were just a team of five people, and that was back in 2006, 2007. We licensed ourselves as a small business lender in about 10 of the biggest states. So obviously, although we were a Canadian corporation, our intention was to, of course, you know, capitalize on the size of the U.S. market and the opportunity. So within a couple of years, we ended up having close to 40 employees in the small town of Kennesaw, Georgia. And we had 20 up in Canada by 2011, 20 employees up in Canada. By 2011, we brought that company public on a Canadian junior exchange. And it was actually in 2023 that company was once again privatized. So that is really how I got into fintech. And although I've worked in, you know, like I said, you know, many different industries, including manufacturing, telecom, the film industry and whatnot, fintech has always been my passion. And when I exited that lending venture that we built from the ground up, and it was a very, very rewarding and successful experience. It was Johnson Joseph that found me, and you know, he said, "Listen, you know, there's not many people in Montreal. I obviously live and work, and my family also lives in Montreal." And he said, "Not too many people really understand fintech, you know, and the relationship between finance and technology, and what it, you know, takes to build a successful business within that industry." So he talked to me about his vision with Kubler, but more importantly with Tenoris 3, which is the company that will, of course, in due time commercialize IE Pulse and Equity Insider. So he said to me, listen, you know small business lending, and within Kubler, we will have a module or a pillar that we called it back then, that will be kind of like a matchmaking type of service between small and medium-sized businesses and financial institutions. And in addition to that, we're going to be having an advertising and a networking and a business intelligence or insights module. And it didn't take long for him to convince me to, take on the opportunity and join the group. So that was back in 2018, 2019. We built the prototype of what is today the Kubler Business Hub. And then back in 2019, Haas and, Liang and for the rest of the group, the company was really putting most of its effort and money and time in building the Chinese market. So I took a pause from Kubler for a couple of years. And then it was, we had, successfully built the proof of concept of the Kubler Business Hub. And it was then in 2023 that, my phone rang and Johnson, shared with me the difficulties that the company was going through. More specifically, this brings me back to the month of April. And not only was I extremely saddened by what he told me had happened at the end of April 2023, I was actually extremely, extremely saddened and angry to hear what had occurred. So as soon as Johnson and a few of the other executives, the co-founder, Golden that we call him, Liang Q, were able to take control back of the company, Johnson asked me if I would be interested in helping rebuild this company, because obviously what happened back in, late spring, early summer 2023 had an extremely negative impact on the operations of this business. So once again, given my history with the company and my passion for fintech and the desire to see Johnson's vision become a reality as it pertains to being able to build and successfully commercialize the products that will be sold to capital market participants, and being once again, having the opportunity to be once again a disturber within such an important and massive industry was a great opportunity. So once again, it didn't take me long to leave the employment that I had, which was a very good one. And although I knew that there would be risk and there would be challenges and a lot of hard work to be done, I joined the group once again in late summer 2023. So that is really, how I got involved with the company, Haas. And, it's been now close to, 15 months that I've been back with Kubler and Tenet. So maybe a bit of a long-winded introduction, but I thought that it was important for, everyone on the call to get an understanding of, how it is that I got involved with the company. That for me, this is not just a job. I've been involved with Kubler since 2018, 2019. I became a shareholder of the company as well in 2019. So I have a vested interest just like everybody else. So again, for me, it's all about making it work and making sure that things move forward. I'm in here 5 days a week and oftentimes 6 and 7 just to make sure that things move in the right direction. So that's me.
Yeah, that was a wonderful introduction. And just my conversations that I've had with you, we're very fortunate to have you, especially with your U.S. experience that you have. And I know that's something that we're going to talk about here in a little bit about trying to enter the U.S. market. So that's ideal for us that you have experience coming from Canada into the U.S. market. So that's only a benefit.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Jose. And to be honest with you, it happened that way since the day that I left university. And now I'm feeling old because that was in the late 90s. I've always worked with the Americans, and I was very fortunate that I was offered multiple different, very exciting opportunities by US-based companies. So to be honest with you, for me, it's just natural to obviously work with and within the US market.
Yeah, that's wonderful. That really is. Well, we put some questions together for you, and me and Sports, we're just going to kind of go back and forth, and I'm going to start right off with the first one, and I know that's what everybody wants to kind of know about, including myself. And how is the soft launch going with Cubular, and when do you expect the advertising and networking part to go live, you know, full production?
Yeah, that's a really good question, Hus. And I know that people have been impatient, you know, for quite some time to hear how things are going and when, you know, we expect to launch the next two pillars, which, by the way, Johnson doesn't like me calling them pillars. He prefers the word module, so I'll call them modules from now on. So listen, it's going well. Nonetheless, in parallel, or I guess in addition to the soft launch, we have gone through an extremely thorough and detailed testing of the application internally. And, you know, although we want to put this application out there for the general public to, you know, begin benefiting from the additional services, it became evident to many of us internally that when we actually release the next two modules, that, you know, the application has to have that wow effect. So it was important to make sure that everybody felt comfortable with the user interface, the user experience, the graphical experience, that the features and functionalities that small and medium-sized business owners and operators have learned to expect will be there, as well as, and perhaps the most important thing, the ability for them to navigate throughout the Cubular Business Hub in a seamless and intuitive kind of way. So once again, in parallel with the soft launch, we went through an extremely thorough testing phase, and we continue to do that on a daily basis to make sure that as soon as we release it to the general public, everybody will be pleased with it. And that includes, obviously, all stakeholders, including shareholders and current members, future members of the platform. So I guess the second, you know, piece to your question was, when can we expect for the next two modules to be launched? Well, I work very, very closely, given my background in developing applications, testing applications, commercializing applications, and obviously providing the support to the users of those applications. I work very, very closely with development. So what I can tell you is that in development, it's always difficult to put your finger on a specific day. But having said that, and I'm not skating away from the question, I believe that we're within weeks. This is not anymore months, but it's you know, it's within weeks that we expect to open up the next two modules to the general public. It is also worth mentioning, Haas, that we haven't just built two additional modules for the benefit of small and medium-sized business owners out there. We have also completely revamped the financing pillar. And we have also revamped the registration module. Because remember, the application, in essence, has five modules within. You have the registration, you have the financing pillar, you have the advertising, you have the networking, and you have the business insights, which used to be called business intelligence. I guess it changed name over time. So we have been working on those five modules in parallel. So although, yeah, the next two pillars that are deemed to be new are the networking and the advertising pillar. We have also revamped the entire registration module as well as the financing pillar. Because everything has to fit together for us to be able to acquire that data that ultimately we're getting paid with and that we will continue to be paid with, and which will then be transferred over to Tenoris 3, which is the entity that owns and will operate IE Pulse as well as Equity Insiders. So I just wanted to mention that yeah, it seems like it's a long time coming, and I know that it is, trust me, everybody in here appreciates everybody's patience, you know, with the development. But yes, we're very, very close. I think we're now within weeks. It's not anymore months, but for me, as the chief operating officer of this company, it's extremely important that before we put it out there, that we feel comfortable and that we feel satisfied with the quality of what will be delivered.
Yeah, I mean, that's wonderful news. It really is. I'm a small business owner myself, and I can see it from the, you know, from the other side, where when the product comes out, you want it to be seamless, kind of like you said. You want it to flow nice. You want to be able to easily navigate, you know, through the different options. So, yeah, that sounds wonderful. It really does.
And if I can just add one more thing to that, Haas. Sure. You know, I have been a small business owner multiple times. And, you know, what I tend to do is the following. I put myself in the shoes of a person who's never accessed the application before. And I ask myself, okay, if I was to log on today, would I be able to navigate? Will this be like an iPhone, which does not come with any instructions on how to use it? Because the concept is not typical, right? I mean, you have four different modules. You don't pay for any of the services. You gotta connect your accounting software package for us to be able to do the data extract. The matching has to take place between the financial institutions. Remember, financial institutions includes everything from banks to alternative to merchant cash advance to factoring type of companies. So, you know, it has to be intuitive. It has to be self-explanatory in how it is that you navigate. So yes, that is extremely, extremely important. One thing is building the features and the functionalities, but for me, the navigation is equally important. So we're almost there. That I can tell you for sure.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Thank you so much. Here's another question. When should we expect IE Pulse and Equity Insider to be available for data sales?
Okay, so thanks, Liang. That's another excellent question. And listen, you know, I've for me, you know, communication, transparency, and honesty is just the most important thing. And I want for everyone to understand that it is difficult to put, once again, you know, a specific date on it, because that is 100% dependent on the nature of the data extracts that we will be able to continue to do. So depending on the consistency, the completeness, and the, you know, frequency and continuity of those data extracts, that is what will determine, you know, how quickly it is that the data that we have and that is then extrapolated. So we have a very smart guy who works for Tenoris 3. He's our chief analytics officer. So that's the guy who essentially has built all of the models and obviously the applications, you know, that people will essentially used to access IE Pulse and Equity Insider. All of those are in development, but all of the modeling, in particular for IE Pulse, has been completed. But then again, for us to be able to begin to commercialize and more specifically to answer your question, sell the data plans, the subscriptions through IE Pulse, which obviously IE Pulse will come before Equity Insider, we got to make sure that the data that we have, once again, is complete, is consistent, and the data extracts can be done on on a consistent and frequent basis. He will determine then at that point in time, the chief analytic officers, when it is that the data that we have is representative of a specific industry, for example. I'll give you an example. So if we wanted to know what, you know, retail sales, if we wanted to build an index for retail sales in the province of Ontario, as an example, right? Well, he extrapolates and he will determine, okay, at this point in time, we have enough data that is representative of what retail sales in Ontario might be like. So again, before we can run, we got to be able to walk. And I think that with the launch of the pillars, and obviously we have, you know, a pretty robust marketing strategy that has been developed and which will be rolled out. And I believe that we're going to be very, very successful at, you know, attracting a very large number of SMEs very, very quickly. And given the fact that we don't discriminate as, you know, to which SME it is that we're welcoming within the platform, I expect for a lot of diversity to come our way very, very quickly. And as soon as we have that, we will begin to extrapolate and we'll be able to build this then in exchange, these, you know, these indexes. So once again, you know, I can't give you a specific date because it is not something that I can control. It will really depend on the availability of the data. And once again, how representative that data is, because the day that we put it out there, it is going to be representative.
Okay.
So thank you so much. That explains a lot. It's really, it's the details everybody's interested in. So yeah, thank you. That sounds great.
You're welcome.
All right. I'm going to kind of go a different way here now. What's the future with China? And, you know, we build all these subsidiaries in China. I mean, are they still all active? Are they not active? And then, you know, the big thing I really want to know, and a lot of us have talked about, if we have all these subsidiaries in China, and we should have probably tons of data from these subsidiaries that we've worked with, is that something in the future that we'd be able to sell to, say, like Chinese companies? Maybe not that it leaves China, but at least that we can sell the data in China.
Yes, absolutely, yes, Haas. So, first and foremost, yes, all of those subsidiaries down there are still active. Okay, they're still active. They're still operating. Of course, over the last few months, we have been transitioning from a transaction-based type of business and revenue model over to, you know, a data-based as well as a subscription-based revenue model. So what will happen in China, and I believe that a press release was put out to that effect maybe, about a month ago, maybe a little bit longer than that, is that, you know, a data science subsidiary will be created in China. And given the fact that, I mean, we've had, right, hundreds and hundreds of thousands, if not millions of transactions move through the many platforms that we built and have been operating over there within many different industries, including the supply chain industry, the insurance industry, the lending industry, the energy consumption measurement and forecasting business that we have over there. So the data, the quantity of data that we have in China is significant, is substantial. So yes, the plan is to begin to move away from a transaction-based type of revenue model, which was really not very profitable and heavy to operate within China, and to move onto the database and subscription-based type of revenue model. So yes, the subsidiaries are still operating. The infrastructure that was built over the years is still there. The network that the company was able to establish, the business network that we have established over the last 7 to 8 years is still there, is now just a matter of time, putting together that subsidiary, structuring the business the proper way, and then, yes, beginning to sell the data plans in China.
That's great. Yeah, that's wonderful. That's great news. That's what we've all kind of hoped for, is that we could sell the data in China. So excellent. Very good news. I'm going to bring up another hot topic here. It's our dragon himself, Michael Wunderlich. You know, once we got the news release that his company is going to be working with Tenet, I mean, that was exciting for all of us. Anybody who watches Shark Tank or The Dragon's Den knew who he was. So I was just wondering if you could just maybe give us an idea how he'll be helping Tenet going forward.
Yeah, that's another good question, Hus. And listen, obviously, you know, it is Johnson that, you know, works very, very closely with Michael. And my understanding is that, you know, the main benefit that we will reap from this transaction will be via the network that Michael, you know, has at his, I guess, at his, you know, well, yeah, the network that he has built over the years, the network of people, you know, in particular high net worth. He's very well known in Bay Street. And given the fact that, you know, Kubler and Tenet still continue to depend on, you know, financing for the purpose of developing and very soon commercializing the applications, I believe that the biggest benefit that will be brought about through this relationship is the network that Michael has. So once again, it is really Johnson that works much, you know, much closer with him than I do. And again, since the company continues to be in constant financing mode, I think that Michael's network will be of benefit via the high net worth that he knows.
Yeah, wonderful.
Okay, the next question, bringing it back to China for just a few minutes. With Golden's new position, will he be overseeing the data sales in China? What will his responsibilities be with the global development of the business hub?
Yeah, so maybe I'll respond first to the second, you know, piece of the or part of the question. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so the idea in here is we obviously have a development team up in Montreal, and they also have a development team in China that has over the years been involved in building all of those platforms and applications that the company has been using over the last, you know, 6 to 7 years. So the idea is to essentially find synergies between the two teams. And that press release was put out about a week, maybe 10 days ago, making mention of the fact that Golden was now going to be taking responsibility of all of the development, not only China, but also North America. So yeah, the idea is to find synergies between the two teams, to do as much knowledge transfer between the two teams as possible. And then yes, Golden will continue to oversee the operations in China. I mean, obviously Golden spends most of his time over there, and he has a well-established network of, you know, business associates and the like. So, yes, the expectation is for him to oversee the data sales in China. And we got to remember that to really understand the Chinese market, they say that you know it takes one to know one. So, so I think that yeah, that Golden is really the person in the best position to do that. And as far as I know, that is the plan today.
Perfect. That's perfect.
Yeah, that's great. You know, I want to bring this up. You know, we've talked about this different times throughout the years, but I still think it's something that we should still kind of bring up, is NASDAQ. You know, everybody's right. His hope is to get back on NASDAQ. And it sounds like that's also Johnson's hope too, is to get us back on in 2025. And I know that it seems like we've all learned a lot about how that whole process works by trying to get uplisted, and that you need to, you know, work with the OSC before you can go back onto the NASDAQ. So are you able to give us an update on this and kind of where we're at? And does it look like it's going to be possible for 2025?
Yeah, so I mean, so everything that, you know, Johnson has told me so far points to, you know, I mean, essentially, if the opportunity is there to do the uplisting, for sure we will do it. And I know that, you know, it has been press released in the past that, you know, the plan is to once again list with the NASDAQ. But like everything else, I think, it will be a matter of timing. I mean, we all know that, you know, listing with a senior exchange is not only really time consuming, but it's also expensive, right? So once again, I mean, if the opportunity presents itself and the company, you know, is in a position to take advantage of that opportunity, I think that will happen. I mean, we also press released recently that, you know, we had put through an application to list with the OTCQB. So for me, I'm the type of guy who, and I think I mentioned this, you know, at the beginning of the call, you know, you got to walk before you can run. And I think that, you know, even just through the OTCQB, that will give access, right, to for American investors to essentially participate in the purchase and the sale of the stock of the company. So I'm really taking it kind of like one bite at a time, right? So I think that you know, if the potential is there and the opportunity presents itself, the intention is to once again list with NASDAQ. And again, I think it would be Johnson who would be more closely involved with the listing, as well as our CFO. I'm much more involved really with the operational side of the business, but as far as I know, if the opportunity presents itself and the company is in a position to do so, then yes, the plan remains the same.
Okay. And you had mentioned the OTCQB for the U.S. shareholders. And like we talked, you know, I'm on the U.S. side. And luckily yes. For me, I deal with Fidelity. So I've never had an issue with buying shares, but I've talked to others and it sounds like sometimes it is an issue to pick up the shares. Where are we at with that right now? Are we getting ready to get listed back onto the OTCQB soon, or do you know?
Yeah, everything that Johnson has told me with regards to our application is positive. He tells me that it's going well. He hasn't really, and I, to be honest with you, I haven't really asked specifically, you know, as to the timing of it. Is it weeks? Is it a month? Is it, you know, 8 weeks? Like how long? That I don't know. I'm not as close to that piece as Johnson is, but all that I know is that it's going well and we're on our way. So given those comments and that information that has been shared with me, I would expect for the listing to be approved in short time.
Yeah, great. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay, another question is, are we still planning on launching Kubler in the U.S. in 2025? We know that. But when should we look for this? And are you looking at starting on the East Coast first? How is that going to work?
Yeah, good question, Liang. So yes, absolutely yes. I mean, the plan has always been, and I'm going back to, 2019. The plan has always been to offer the, you know, membership and the services to small and medium-sized business operators and owners throughout the U.S. I think that, like everything else, Canada will be more of a test market, just, I mean, given the size, mm-hmm. you know, the market in Canada versus the U.S. I think the market in Canada is about 10% of that in the U.S. So the plan is to, yes, launch the service offering in the U.S. in 2025. How quickly will that happen? Well, now I can talk about operations. So from an operational standpoint, I would like to see the product performing at a very high level from every single standpoint before we introduce it to the U.S. market, just because of the importance of obviously making a great first impression when we first open for business in the U.S. So I think that given all of the improvements that are currently being made to the application, and once again, from a features and functionality standpoint, from a navigation standpoint, from an graphical interface standpoint, I think that when we launch in Canada, the product will be very well received. So I expect for, I guess, just the overall experience to be very, very positive upon launching of the two new modules. If that goes well, I think that it will just be a matter of months for us to make the adjustments to the platform that will need to be made from a registration standpoint, from a customer service standpoint, the relationships that will need to be finalized with the financial institutions in the U.S. that will be participating within the financing module. So for me, from an operational standpoint, given the fact that I'm expecting for the launch to go very, very well in Canada, I would tend to think that it would just be a matter of a couple of months for us to then do this in the U.S. And now, in terms of doing this first in the East Coast versus the, you know, the Midwest or, you know, or the West Coast, I don't really see any, you know, I mean, aside from the time difference, which I don't think should really play into the decision too heavily as to where to first launch, you know, I don't see any reason why we couldn't just launch it everywhere. Because once again, for us, what is important is to get diversity in terms of the type of businesses, their size, the industry. So the more the merrier. And again, discriminating between, you know, the East Coast and the West Coast, to me, doesn't really, you know, it wouldn't make a lot of sense aside from the time difference. But the way we will be structuring, you know, customer support services should be able to handle that, you know, that challenge quite well. We'll probably have someone, you know, available between, you know, 8 a.m. and 5 p.m., including, you know, Pacific time. So no, honestly, I think we could probably launch nationwide. I just don't see why not.
That's great. And I'm confident if everything is going to be seamless before you do it. And thank you so much for how much you care about shareholders.
For sure.
Oh, no, yes. I really do. And listen, Liang, you know, I had shared this with, you know, with Hoss, the first time that him and I spoke, you know, I've been fortunate enough to participate in multiple startup type of ventures. I've had my own as well. So I know how difficult it is to raise capital. And I know, you know, what the responsibility of it's like of using that money smartly and efficiently. So something that I mentioned to Haas in, you know, when we spoke last is that in one of the businesses that I was lucky enough to participate, you know, one of the shareholders once called me, and it was a shareholder who had invested with us only $7,500. And I mean, we had shareholders of all sizes, you know, some of them put $500,000 and some of them put $7,500. And he said to me, Michael, you know what? I know you're really busy. And at the time I was the CFO of that company. And he said, I really don't want to bother you. And then, I, you know, I right away said, listen, at the end of the day, you're not. And he said to me, this is important. He said to me, you know, I know that I'm a small shareholder. I only put $7,500 into your company. And I said to him, to me, doesn't matter. I said, it doesn't matter if you have 5,000 bucks or 500,000. I said, you're never bothering me. And you can call me anytime you want, because the reason that I'm sitting in this chair is because of you. And you're one of the stakeholders of this company. So just as, you know, my employees and my suppliers and my customers, my shareholders are a stakeholder and they're equally important. So I said to him, you're never bugging me. And that's what I told Haas. Don't be shy to call me anytime if you have any questions. I'm an extremely, you know, casual and transparent type of person. So yes, to me, shareholders are extremely important. And I'm cognizant of the fact that you guys have placed your trust on us. And that weighs very, very heavily on my shoulders. I take it very, very seriously. And to be honest with you, that's one of the main motivators for me to be here every single day, just pushing hard and doing everything that I can to help this company move forward. And then, again, most importantly, and just equally, not most important, just equally important, I really want to see Johnson's vision become a reality. He told me since the first day, Michael, we're a data science, data analytics, an artificial intelligence type of venture. Kubler is a means to an end. And he said to me, we will build these products through Tenoris 3, and we will be extremely successful at what it is that we have set ourselves to do. And I truly believe in that vision. And I think that it is truly possible to do it. And you know, we just gotta do it the right way. We gotta do it in lock steps, but we will get there. So sorry, a bit of a long-winded answer. As you can see, I wear my heart on my sleeve, but yes, shareholders are important to me.
No,
thank
you
so much.
Yeah, I mean, that was a wonderful answer. It just shows us that it's like building blocks. One block has to go on to a next. And if the first block wasn't placed right, well, it's not going to be supported enough to hold the blocks that need to sit on top of it. So
exactly.
I appreciate it. Yeah.
And there's been a lot of that building, Haas. You know, I'm glad that you mentioned that because, again, you know, we cannot ignore the past, you know, and we got to learn from the past, you know, to hopefully do better in the future. And again, going back to building, yeah, we have to rebuild this company almost from the ground up, you know, following the events that took place in, you know, unfortunate events, you know, in the summer of 2023. We have been forced to spend a lot of our time rebuilding. And to me, Haas, one more thing, I mean, companies are not only about, you know, the nuts and the bolts that make up the applications. In this case, obviously, they're virtual, right? Because we're not building any kind of physical machines. But companies are about people, right? And for me, it's important to surround yourself with, you know, with competent, smart people who share the same vision that you do, that share the same values. And it has taken me a bit of time. I do manage several teams within the company, and it's taken me some time to identify the right people that I think I can trust, you know, to help us move the company forward. So I just thought of throwing that in there because you mentioned building, and yeah, I mean, you know, there's been a lot of building over the last, call it 12 to 15 months.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Like even in my own business, I always say, right seat, right role. So you got to be in the right role if you want to sit in that seat. So yeah, that's great. We have two more questions for you here.
Sure.
And Leanne, I'll let you do the next one and I'll do the last one.
Okay. What is the status of the AbleView global partnership, and does it help us in China?
Yeah, so it will definitely help us in China. And the conversations that I've had internally, and obviously many of them have been with Golden, who is the China CEO, is that that partnership will be hugely beneficial to us. But for us to really reap the benefits of it, we have to first complete the four modules of the business hub, and in parallel, begin to I guess, exploit or commercialize the platform in its full form over in China. When that happens, then that partnership, the way it has been explained to me, will bear fruit.
Sounds great.
Great. Okay, the last question we have for you. And I don't think when this came out, I don't think that maybe people or investors, I should say, probably understand the real impact of this. And it's with the Elite Times partnership and, you know, how we had, 1,000 new SMEs that it sounds like that we had access to for their data. Are you able to explain that a little bit to us and just let us know the true value of having that many companies' data, you know, come into us at one time?
Yeah, of course. And this, I guess this is a really, really important point because like most things in life, host, you know, it's not necessarily, and I mean, this is hugely important because I know that a lot of people oftentimes focus on, you know, the number of members, you know, whether it's 1,000 or 10,000 or 50,000 or 2 million. But when it comes to data, the most important thing is quality versus quantity, okay? Because if you have 1,000 SMEs, right, that are coming to you via a bookkeeper, right? If, you know, 850 of them are solid businesses that have, long operating history. If out of those 850, you know, there's just say, you know, about 100 in a different industry, then that is very good because now if there's 100 from, you know, a different industry, now you're covering 8 industries. If the quality of that data, if the size of those businesses, if the time in operations is long enough, and once again, if the consistency, right, of that data and the nature of the data is representative of an industry, then it's fantastic. Now, if 900 of them are too small, they've been in operations for, you know, less than a year, and so on and so forth, then maybe it's not as good. So once again, I mean, this ties really nicely with what it is that I was trying to explain at the beginning of the call. It's not necessarily about the, the quantity. It has everything to do with the quality. And you see, now we've gone, 360, because we were talking about, hey, should we first launch, you know, in the East Coast versus the West Coast? I don't want to limit myself from an operational standpoint. I don't want to limit myself to a geographical location. I want to get them all, big and small. It doesn't matter because at the end of the day, the more data that I bring to our chief analytics officer, you know, the easier that it will be for him to extrapolate and define and decide when it is that the data is now representative of something, right? Of something that we will want to sell through IA Pulse. So I think that working with the bookkeepers and small CPA firms, it's a fantastic strategy, and it is one that we will continue to exploit and to grow because I believe that the nature of the data, given the profile of the businesses that are paying for services via CPA or just a bookkeeping type of firm, the nature of that data is very, very good. So yes, I think that 1,000 clients coming to us through Elite Times CPA is going to be very, very good. And of course, we won't stop there, right? We will continue to build relationships with CPA, small CPA firms, as well as bookkeepers, business organizations, business associations, so that we can actually acquire or bring in new members by the bunch, right? In big bundles, as opposed to just going one at a time. So, of course, although we have a marketing department that, you know, is very, very smart and will continue to build, you know, an high impact digital marketing type of acquisition strategies. I've always believed very, very strongly that I guess the straightest line to the destination will be through the business organizations, business associations, CPAs, and bookkeepers. And this is only one of several that we have, because we do have partnerships in place and agreements in place with several bookkeeping firms. And once again, as soon as the next two modules are released, we will put our foot to the pedal and we will continue to grow this type of relationships with CPA and bookkeeper firms.
Yeah, this has been fantastic tonight. I mean, we can't thank you enough for, you know, all your answers you've given us and just being straightforward with us. And we both really, really appreciate it. The only thing left is, do you have any closing statement you would like to tell all shareholders?
Well, I mean, there's so many things. I guess we could talk for about an hour that I would want to tell you guys. But I guess first and foremost, I really want to thank everyone for not only their support, you know, but their patience and more importantly, their trust. And I just want for everyone to know that, you know, we're doing everything within our power to make sure that this business will be successful and this business will be something that, you know, everyone will want to talk about one day. We want to become that disturber. I have been a disturber within, you know, the financial services and the lending industry in the past, and the satisfaction that comes with having created something new, something that no one had done before, when everybody else said, no, it can't be done, or it's just too difficult, or it's not going to work. I mean, it is going to work. Maybe not in its pure form as, you know, we first thought, you know, in year one, year two, but it will work, and, you know, and we will make it happen. So all of that say that I'm very, very excited about what I'm seeing the team deliver in terms of product features and functionalities. In particular, I've been working very, very closely with marketing and UI and UX, so user interference, user experience and user interface, I'm sorry. So the team has been working very, very hard at making sure that the product has an appeal and that it looks good, that it works good. So to me, that is very, very exciting. And once again, I'm working very, very closely with our marketing folks. And, you know, our VP of marketing is a hugely accomplished, you know, business executive. He was one of the main participants that helped bring Adidas to China. So he's been involved with, you know, that type of a company. And we will work very, very hard to make sure that, you know, the product does well once we put it out there. So all that I'm saying is that I'm excited because I'm working with very committed and very smart people. And I think that, you know, it's just a matter of continuing to push hard and to just make sure that, you know, everybody's doing what they're supposed to be doing. And then, you know, the results will be positive. So all of that say that I'm just very, very excited about, you know, the outlook of Kubler. And then, of course, soon thereafter, what we will be able to do with that data via the subscription plans that we will be selling through IE Pulse. And, you know, we expect, obviously, for the investment community to be receptive of the product that we will be putting out there. So with that, all of us say that it's exciting. It's very, very exciting, and I'm looking forward to the next few weeks and the next couple of months that are coming our way.
Well, that's great. Yeah, thank you again for all the time you spent with us tonight. We both
thank
really
you. Yeah. Appreciate it so much.
It is my pleasure. It is my pleasure, Liang. It is my pleasure, Haas. And once again, thank you, everyone, for having given me the opportunity to introduce myself to you on a more personal and intimate kind of way. And thank you for your questions. And once again, if there's anything else, you know, that comes up in the next, you know, couple of weeks or months that you have questions about and that I can suggest, you know, an answer for, I'll be more than happy to do so.
That's wonderful. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a good night.
You too. Thank you, everyone.
Bye now.
Good night.